You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Now we can make that difference. A lot of great
around. This is the Gaffer and Hooligan Podcast. Discussions, debates, and opinions on Major League Soccer and the CONCACAF region from a Canadian perspective. Hosted by Kamal Hilton.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Gaffer and Hooligan, covering all things MLS and CONCACAF from a Canadian perspective. Available on Red Nation Online, War Room Sports Podcast Network, and FatsRadio.com. I'm your host, Kamal Hilton, joined by Aaron Nielsen. How's it going, Aaron?
Good.
And I'm excited for this one because I had to make a special announcement here. The Gaffer and Hooligan originally was supposed to be me bringing on a variety of different guests and whatnot, and we talk MLS. But I think since we've been doing the podcast together over the past little bit, we've developed, I guess, a chemistry. So I think it is a good decision to bring you on as a full-time co-host.
I won podcast idol. Yeah. Yeah. I get like $1 million in the contract for life or something?
Your check's in the mail. Your check's in the mail. But, yeah, I guess I'll give you
the point. Yeah. No, I appreciate this. You gave me the information recently, so it's pretty new to me. But, you know, again, I think what we're providing is a lot of useful information since we've done the podcast together. And now that we're sort of in cahoots, you know, I just think I know in our first ever podcast, it's interesting because we're going to do a mid-season preview and give some awards, and our first ever podcast was an end of the season preview or end of the season review where we also gave awards, but you know, and you do say in your introduction what you think the podcast is going to be, but just to reiterate that, you know, first of all, I would say that you know, I'm very comfortable with your soccer knowledge, and you know, I think my soccer knowledge is very good, and if people complain with that, they can tweet you and you can give them the information and tell them differently. But also, you know, I think one of the things that the listeners should know is that we do love soccer, but we're general sports fans initially. And arguably, you know, if this podcast was on basketball, I know you do some great articles recently with the World Cup in basketball. If this podcast was on baseball, you know, because of our location, if this podcast was on hockey, I think we would, you know, be able to talk about the subject matter in an interesting way and bring up topics and make, you know, interest people in listening it.
Yeah, but I think I could fake hockey knowledge.
But at the same time, I think, you know, one of the reasons I'm saying this is that I think what we're expressing in terms of soccer is very important, because what you see in the market today, especially in North America, is all the quote-unquote soccer experts, be it professional or be it fans, are players of the game, right? So they give you that perspective. And there's very few soccer people in North America who gives you a sports fan perspective, an audience perspective, a behind the scene business perspective, which, you know, which is what creates sports and what makes sports interesting. You know, it's great to play basketball, it's great to play baseball, but if the analysis for those two sports were only people who played the game, you would not get the stories, you would not get the excitement that those sports provide. And I think our goal as the podcast progresses is to be, you know, that option, and to give people an additional form of information that they might not get anywhere else.
Yeah, and I also think to that point, there's a lot of MLS podcasts out there sprouting up, mm-hmm. and they bring more of a news angle and more of a this is what happened this week type of thing. And I think what we want to provide is a little something different. And I guess an analogy I can make is where we want to be the Breaking Bad of MLS podcasting. Walt and Jesse provide a different type of drug than your average drug dealer.
There you go.
That's what we want to provide.
There you go.
But just a quick overview before we get started. So in segment one, the first round, we want to talk a little bit about allocation.
Sure.
And the... because Toronto FC was involved with a trade recently involving...
Your friend DeMarcus Beasley is in the MLS.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. Also, we're going to talk about CONCACAF and, you know, MLS maybe needing to direct more of its attention towards bringing in more CONCACAF players instead of the big names. You had a refereeing article we wanted to talk bit about.
Sure.
And then in segment two, last call, we're going to do our mid-season awards, which should be a little fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's start off with the allocation thing, and I'll kick it over to you. Just give a general overview for those that aren't familiar with allocation.
Sure. And again, because it's the MLS, no one knows all the rules. And because it's the MLS, no one follows all the rules. But generally, allocation is that second-tier player, the player that you're not willing to give DP salaries for, but has a connection for the league. So in the past, it's been players who played previous in the league, spent some time in Europe and wanted to come back to the MLS. It was players who maybe are in the U.S. or Canadian national team who are looking for a spot in the MLS. And basically, it's a way, like all sports in North America, it's a way to create parity. And so all the players don't choose to go on LA, or all the players don't choose to go on Seattle or Toronto. That, you know, the teams who are weaker, the teams who need the most help, are supposed to get the first position and supposed to get these players. The irony is, you know, quote MLS, is right before these allocations are supposed to take place, there's these trades that happen, and all of a sudden the team who, you know, might be regarded as a top club in the MLS, or at least an iconic club in the MLS, happens to get these players, and a team like Chivas, or, you know, in this case Toronto, gets an unknown college player who was drafted 38th 2 years ago. So I just think it's, you know, the reason I wanted to talk about it is again, you know, just to talk about the rules and stuff like that, but just the, you know, again, and not to harp on this, but, you know, just, you know, the way the MLS does stuff. You know, I think it's our responsibility to basically call them out and question stuff.
Yeah, I didn't really understand the allocation when Clint Dempsey came along, because I know Portland had the top pick there, and then all of a sudden Seattle ended up with it. That makes no sense.
Well, there's you know, this year Papa went to Seattle as well when Chivas was supposed to have it. Now Chivas supposedly gave Rosales to Chivas got Rosales as sort of compensation. And now the question is based on the rules, at least that I know of, is that if you do not want the player who's next on the allocation, you can pass, and it'll just go down the list, right? And so the weird thing today is there's supposedly rumored a number of players who are going to be up for this allocation soon before the MLS trade deadline, or before their move deadline, including players like Breck Shea, who might come on loan, or Jermaine Jones. And so not only did Toronto trade away their, you know, allocation spot for basically nothing, if we've been honest about it, then LA trades for the second spot. And, you know, Seattle trades for the third, you know, not that hasn't happened, but wouldn't surprise me, right? So it's just this sort of, and then, you know, to add to that, you know, and this is where this became an issue, you know, usually I just let MLS stuff pass me, but I was listening to the radio broadcast of the DC United Toronto FC game, and Corvallis, who's the player who Toronto got from Houston, played, he had a difficult first half, and the announcer to big him up and to basically said, oh yeah, this is a great player, and this is the reason, you know, Coach Nielsen and Berchenko was saying that this is the player they want, and they're very excited to have him. You know, arguably, you know, we do our draft podcast. We know a lot about university players and stuff like that. And this is a player who I have a top 100 list. I had ranked 48th. He was drafted like 38th overall 2 years ago. And, you know, he's a good player. He played midfield in college, but he's basically athletic. And so we have Ashton Morgan, who's played 1 minute all season. So we trade for another, or, you know, we, meaning Toronto, because we're in Toronto. So we basically trade for another Ashton Morgan. And we gave away, potentially, DeMarcus Beasley, potentially Jermaine Jones, potentially Breck Shea, potentially Sasha Christian, or potentially someone else who, you know, might come down the line. And I just think it doesn't make sense. You know, if this was another professional sport and a deal like that happened, you know, people would start calling it out. So that's why I thought it would be.
Yeah, my thing is, if you were to compare this to other sports, I understand, like, okay, NBA and NHL, they have their draft lottery, which is, I guess, essentially what this allocation thing is kind of like.
Yeah, in some capacity, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's more, sorry to interrupt, but it's more equivalent to the sort of waiver wire that other sports have, where they do give, even in those other sports, they do give the teams who, quote, unquote, need the most help first say if they want these players and stuff like that. So it works in the same way.
But then in those leagues, does the league say, okay, I think your best fit is Seattle?
No.
This is my problem with MLS.
No, those leagues are done, you know, it's fair and square, right? You know, there's a reason why teams in those sports are good and teams in those sports fail. Now, arguably, you have a draft and you can get the top players in the draft, which the MLS does, and teams like DC United, who we can talk about, or New England, are improving because of their good drafting. But, you know, there's other things like free agency, like other things which are kind of controlled by the MLS brass, which are not, you know, the other sports is all, you know, team versus team, right? There's no league involvement.
That's kind of my main issue with MLS. Like, everything is them situating certain things, and then things like allocation money, when they don't publicize how much a team got in a trade that involved allocation money, you're supposed to, like, how do you know your team got the better of the deal when you don't know how much money was
allocated? Well, you don't. And then, you know, and then the irony is, you know, the, you know, as I said, the irony is if everyone shut up and let's let the deals happen, it would probably be better for the league, right? The irony is, and as we go into our awards situation, you know, Montreal picked up Gonzalez as a young DP at the beginning of the year, or a promising player, and wrote great articles, so this guy is going to be effective and be, you know, the striker that the team was missing and stuff like that. I don't think he's played a minute or played maybe 10 minutes all season. And as I said, in this recent trade, you know, at least the reporters who speak to the coaches and speak to the general manager was saying that this is a player Toronto FC wanted and was coveting and stuff like that. Meanwhile, he was drafted 38th. Toronto had 5 picks, including Emery Walshman and guys that never, don't even exist on the team before him, and passed up on him. So, you know, A, B don't equal C, and that's, you know, that's the problems that I have with the league.
Yeah, so we could go on about this for a little while, but I want to kind of get our thoughts on the actual deal itself.
Okay.
For me, I think Carvalho to TFC, he's the type of guy, he's very versatile.
Sure.
He can play all the midfield positions, and Toronto's playing him at right back now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, he's a very useful player. I don't think DeMarcus Beasley would have wanted to come to Toronto FC, nor do I think the league would want him to be on
Toronto FC. Sure.
So,
yeah, I was looking less at DeMarcus Beasley. And again, as I said, teams can bypass on the allocation if they choose to. And I was looking more at Breck Shea, at Sacha Christian, at Jermaine Jones. You know, imagine a midfield Jermaine Jones and Bradley, you know, basically the U.S. national team midfield, right? And it's, you know, it's goofy in the, you know, like, again, because the MLS is the MLS, you don't usually have the worst team the previous season now being the best team in the league and stuff like that. So, you know, because there is a bit of unfairness based on the structure of the league, but at least it would be honest.
Yeah.
Right, and this is, again, you know, it's and you know, as I said, I'm usually a strong supporter of college-based players and stuff like that. And as I said, Corvallis is in top 50 player. When he was in college, he was mostly a midfielder, but because of his athletic ability, they've put him in as a fullback.
Yeah, and then Beasley, I don't know how much he's going to help Houston now. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think it's mostly marketing and to have a U.S. national team player on your team.
Yeah, so I think we can leave that topic there for now. But a topic I wanted to talk about, because we're coming off the World Cup and mm-hmm. CONCACAF had great success there, I want to know, should MLS be capitalizing on that by focusing more of its attention on bringing in CONCACAF-based players over some of these big names you're seeing come to the league? And the main name that's kind of stuck with me is Frank Lampard on NYCFC. I don't like the deal.
Okay.
Or whatever, the move. Because as an expansion team, do you really want a 36-year-old midfielder as one of the cornerstones of a new team?
Yeah.
That's basically my point. Like, he is the type of player that I would bring in if I'm a Sporting Kansas City that's won MLS Cup and wants to stay at the top. Maybe you bring him in, for example.
Sure.
Or you're a team like Seattle that's wanting to get up there
sure.
and win a title. You might want to bring him in. a new team in their first year building up, I don't think I go with him.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when we do our awards, I think one of the thing is the biggest bust in terms of moves that are coming into the league. And, you know, I don't know the salary that Lampard's getting. I know that's a weird deal where he's playing in Australia as well, and now playing with Manchester City as well. But, you know, arguably he's going to probably get $5-6 million, maybe $8 million a year or something like that. And none of those other teams would pay, I don't think, that amount of money for a player. And the reason why New York's doing it is New York needs to make a splash. You know, again, I'm not necessarily against the deal. And I do, you know, I think this is the sort of forward momentum that the MLS is going into. I think based on, you know, we're recording this on the Sunday, and yesterday there was a game between Manchester United and Real Madrid in Michigan, and 110,000 people showed up to the game, right? So, you know, I think the pace of soccer's interest in North America because of the success of the World Cup and just in general, and because of the MLS, I think we'll see more of this. I think we'll see more. We're becoming a more of a higher tier league. And so the question about the CONCACAF players is, I know there's a number of prospects who are playing in Mexico. I know a few of the other players who are playing in Costa Rica and Honduras and stuff like that. But you would need a semi-high profile name or a guy who's at least going to be a star or competitive in the league to make it a comparable pickup to Lampard.
For me, that's more of a forward's job, okay. I think, because you even look at like Robbie Keane, Thierry Henry. They brought in David Villa, NYCFC. Yeah. I'm fine with that because he's judged off one thing. Can he score goals or can't he?
Yeah.
That's his one. If he can't score goals, he's a bust. If he can score goals, he's the greatest signing ever.
Sure.
But for me, I think they could have found a CONCACAF-based player or a guy in a lower league in Europe that's cheaper, that can do what Lampard can do, and he's younger and you can build him up, and those are the types of players I think MLS should be focusing on.
Yeah, no, I think your point's well given. I think the other interesting fact, because it's New York, is that the Cosmos and the NASL brought Marcus Soros in from who used to play with Rural in Spain, and he is kind of a Lampard type player. He's a provider more than a goal scorer, and helped you know, in the NASL, but help New York Cosmos be successful in that league. You know, it's difficult for me to say that Lampard will be a failed player in the MLS. He'll probably not be worth the money, but he's certainly worth the marketing dollars. So, you know, if that's the way the league wants to go, you know, it's their objective. Again, and probably better for another podcast, but we could talk about scouting in general in the MLS. And I think they're capabilities of picking players. You know, it's nice to say, oh, they need guys and they need good goal scorers and stuff like that. But I think, you know, arguably, you know, just like when we're doing the draft podcast, I think our awareness of some players might even be greater than their awareness. And so I don't know if they even know the guys to bring in to, you know, be successful. And then if you base it on recent acquisitions, you know, some have been good and some have been questionable. So, you know, there's a good chance they could bring in, trying to think of a player, you know, like if they're going to bring Campbell, oh, that'd be amazing, right? And that's the type of player you would want to bring in. That's the type of player you can build the league on. But arguably, you know, they're not going to go out and pay Arsenal $6 million in a transfer deal to bring Campbell into the league, right? So you're talking about that second tier Costa Rican player who might or might not be good in the MLS.
Yeah, I think we can save more of that discussion for another pod because it's definitely interesting. I'd want to dig deeper.
Yeah, sure.
I can let you play GM on another podcast, but I want to get to a refereeing article that you wrote just since I don't believe it's out yet.
Yeah, it
should just be. Give an overview of what it's about.
Yeah, basically, for lack of a better term, it's supporting the referees. And it's supporting the referees with some analytical statistics, but it's also, hey, dude, get off their back, right? You know, I make a line in that saying, you know, the players are not perfect, the league is not perfect, and how many times have you seen fans cheer a blatantly offside goal or a goal that hit the side netting, right? So, you know, no one's perfect kind of thing. But I think it's interesting because the examples I use in the article are where cases where the referees were lenient, where people would assume the referees should be more stricter. And I think that's a connection to soccer in North America. I think we want free play, we want to give players to work things out themselves. opposed to depend on the referee to make all the calls. And so that's basically what the article is on.
I think my thought, having not read it yet, but my thought, looking at it from an MLS referee perspective, I think about the pro refereeing organization and the fact that I think MLS referees can use that as a crutch in a way, because if they make bad calls, they'll know that they're going to get reviewed and they'll get overturned and maybe they'll see a little bit of heat, but it's certainly not to the degree in some other leagues. And I don't know this for a fact, but I don't think they get demoted like in other leagues.
Yeah. Well, again, I think the answer to that is multiple things. Number one is I think the refereeing pool is quite small. So that's one of the things we need to develop referees, to give more options for referees at the MLS level. I think the other thing is that the league unfortunately goes out of its way to try to justify the referees. I know that on as you like to call it, on the MLS official site or the MLS blog, they actually do a video each week breaking down all of the quote fouls and controversial plays, and 90% of the time the guy who's showing the video says, oh, you know, it's not the referee's fault, this is exactly what happened. And then ones that are really controversial, you know, like guys getting hit and red carded without even seeing it on the play, they just ignore, right? So, you know, there certainly have been questionable plays, one-on-one. Now, the other issue is that, you know, in an average football or soccer match, the referee is asked to probably make 200 calls in the game, if you include all throw-ins and injuries and everything else like that, and you might make one or two mistakes. So it's, again, I think it's, you know, unless there is a constant, well, you know, for me, it's a case of consistency, right? So if you know what to expect from the referee, if the referee is very strict and will give a red card on a certain play no matter what, and he shows that throughout the season, I think you give him the benefit of the doubt. If he's erratic and one play he's doing something and the next play he's ignoring something, then you start to question it. And again, I haven't done that much analysis to prove that to me that that's the case.
Yeah, I think some referees have that reputation. You know, you have, what's his face?
Toledo?
Toledo has a reputation for being strict. Okay. You have Soren Stojka, who Ian loves. that guy loves to give out red cards like candy. So some guys have that reputation.
Well, that's the irony. The irony with the article is I showed plays where red cards might have been given and the referee did not give the red cards, right? And you know, and the reference I make in the article is it depends on the league, right? So in traditionally in Mediterranean and South American leagues, the referee is very card friendly and will give like 10 yellow cards in a game and most likely give a red card every one or two games. Where you have, you know, amateur soccer in North America, like college soccer, where the referee gives nothing, right? There's like one red card every 20 games or something like that. So again, it's just the structure of it is. And so one of the questions I ask in the article is, how do you want the game to be refereed? Because the referee, for the most part, is supposed to be a adjudicator for the league. And so if you want everything called, and you want more penalty kicks, and you want more red cards, that will happen. And if you want things to be more free and open, you'd have to accept that certain fouls are going to not be called.
Yeah, I think we'll get more out of this once we actually get to read your article. I would have more opinions when I get a chance to read it, but we can certainly revisit that once that's out. But let us know your thoughts. You can tweet us directly at Kamel Hilton and at ENB Sports. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. Hop onto the Gaffer and Hooligan Facebook page, and you can find this podcast on the War Room Sports Podcast Network and FatsRadio.com. But we're in segment two, last call. We want to get to some mid-season awards.
Sure.
You know, I have about 9 here. Okay. That we can get to.
And we should say that neither of us know who we're going to pick.
Yeah, that's so. The other thing. We purposely didn't email each other, so none of us know who the other picked. But I guess I'll go first and go with top forward is the award. And I'm going to go with Robbie Keane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he scored 2 goals yesterday against Portland. He has 12 goals and 7 assists.
Yeah.
But I equate the LA Galaxy this year to, if you watch NBA basketball, it's the San Antonio Spurs.
Okay.
Nobody really is talking about them now. They're kind of, you know, laying in the weeds, trying to just plod along. And then, but you know, all along, they're going to make a Western Conference final, or they're going to push to make MLS Cup. And I think they're starting to hit that wave now. This used to be what Houston used to be, and we'll get to Houston later.
Okay.
But I think LA is this team this year, and I think Robbie Keane's starting to hit that form. So that's why we're...
Now, I should say this was not my pick, but since it wasn't your pick, I think we should say Bradley Wrightfield. Just give him some credit because he scored 18 goals this year, so you know he deserves that. My pick is actually Dom Dwyer. There's a personal relationship there, but you know, because I was supportive of him as he was coming up and stuff like that. But he's provided the goal scoring that Kansas City has been pretty much lacking the last two seasons, despite winning the championship last year. And to add to the fact that he has basically made Claudio Beisler unknown, says a lot, right? You know, how many times is he's British, but an unknown MLS player, you know, is chosen over, you know, the homegrown player or the high-priced foreigner player. Now, I also had Robbie Keane as an honorable mention, and the reason I didn't have Wright Phillips as my top forward is Terry Henry. Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of credit has to be given to him. We were very critical. I think I've been critical of him. I was concerned the impact he'd have on the season. There was a talk, you know, doesn't seem going to the World Cup as an announcer hurt him. You know, and I think he has like 11 assists, and he hasn't scored as many goals, but he's, you know, he's the reason why Wright Phillips has that many goals.
Yeah, I think you can also talk about Obafemi Martins, who has some goals too, and Clint Dempsey, I guess, plays forward.
Yeah, we talked about forwards a lot last week with our All-Star thing, since 20 forwards went.
Yeah, so, but that's my pick. Top midfielder, I think I'm going to surprise you here. I'm going Javier Morales. Okay. On Real Salt Lake.
Okay.
He's got 6 goals, 7 assists. The reason why he's not talked about is the way RSL play. None of their guys are really talked about. They play a team style. But I think if you take him out, they're not nearly as successful as they are. They're second in the Western Conference.
Okay.
Right now.
Well, I will take Javier's brother from a different mother, Pedro. Pedro Morales for Vancouver, and other than Vancouver's place in the standings, I would give the exact same reasons that you gave for, I think he's been the difference. I think Vancouver would have been very scary this year if he never came and was as effective as he has been. And again, the only reason I picked him, Javier was a choice of mine, but the only reason I picked him was because he has more goals, more assists, and seems to be making a bigger impact. But yeah, you know, Javier's been one of the top players in this league for a long time, and he deserves credit. The only honorable mention I'll give is Alonso for Seattle, because as I said, I think he's been the core steady player in Seattle that's made Seattle such a dominant force in the league this year.
Yeah, I think those are two good selections. But top defender for me, we might have the same person.
Okay.
I'm going to take a wild stab that we might have the same person. I am going with Bobby Boswell.
There you go. That's mine.
He is part of one of the top defenses in MLS. I believe I don't remember how many goals they've conceded, but they're amongst the better defenses in the league. He's played in all their games. He is added as an all-star replacement.
Okay.
I think Chad Marshall went out with an injury or something, and he's in there. And you look at, I think the biggest telling factor is you look at DC United and you look at Houston Dynamo. DC United changed their whole back line, picked up Bobby Boswell from the re-entry draft, basically for nothing. And they're one of the top defenses in the league.
Yeah.
You look at Houston, they're rolling out David Horst and Jermaine Taylor and are trying to go with
AJ Cochran, young guy.
A quicker defense, and it just hasn't worked out at all.
Well, it also shows to you, in terms of our earlier conversation, that if you let teams decide naturally which players to pick and build teams naturally without interference from the league, you can have exciting development stories, right? And the fact that they went in this direction, you know, Franklin's been a good player for them as well. I think we even preseason debated, and I thought DC United was going to be a competitive team this year, and thought Toronto should have might been better going that way than the way they did. I had Bobby Boswell as my number one. I also had Chad Marshall. I thought that he's been influential in Seattle and probably the best defender in the MLS for the past few years is calling for Kansas City. And so those were my sort of three.
I was leaning towards maybe picking a Sporting Kansas City player, but I think that's more a credit to their team than any. I think this is they fall into the same trap as RSL.
Yeah. It's interesting with Colin because there is now sort of rating systems that are supposed to give players credit for statistical accomplishments. And for the last 3 years, Colin's been the top player in those. Now, I don't agree with the rating system totally, but, you know, his consistency and the fact that Kansas City is doing well and he does well, you know, I think he deserves some of the credit.
But let's move on to top goalkeepers. And I'm going DC United again. Hamid. Bill Hamid, 76% save percentage and a 1.06 goals against average. He is leading one of the top defenses in the league. I think it's almost a no-brainer to go with Bill Hamid.
And I have a brain. I also have Bill Hamid. I think it's interesting that last year he was the odd man out, and he did have some, he played for the England or USA under 21, but, you know, he's shown that, you know, because he was supposed to be the starter last year and they gave it to Willis or the other guy. And, you know, he's proven to be a quality keeper, and I think he's one to look out for the future.
And I think even on the U.S. men's national team, because you're not going to have Tim Howard there forever, and Nick Raimondo's not going to be there.
Yeah, I always thought Johnson for Chicago was the big goalie prospect and one to look out for, but I now think Hamid's probably number one in that decision.
Yeah, but for top coach, I'm going to go with Jeff Kassar, RSL.
Okay.
They are 9 wins, 4 losses, 9 draws, second in the Western Conference. And for me, I didn't know or what to expect out of him when Jason Christ left.
Yeah.
I know he's like a disciple of Jason Christ and they just promoted the assistant coach, but there's always that, will the guy in the chair beside the main chair be able to step up and produce the goods? And so far, I think he's been one of the top coaches in the league on a team that's not being talked about. So
coming off of a
MLS Cup final.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go for that, and I also thought you were going to go for Chivas' coach. I went a different direction, partly just because of the record and you know where they deserve to be in Shiggy Schmidt. You know, he's proven to be a top coach. You know, he has a lot of issues, and a lot of people have issues with him. But, you know, you can't deny where Seattle is in the standings and the influence he has. And then my second pick, and I have a co for top coach, is Paul Mascheroni, who now became the full-time coach for Colorado. And was, you know, and they were kind of in the loop. They didn't know what was going on. They were trying to get a more serious coach or a more established coach, and he's come in. And, you know, we know through the history of the MLS how difficult it is for these former players to just come in and you know be coaches and be influential, and he's been able to do it with Colorado.
Yeah, it's a surprising one, but I like it. In terms of top rookie, now I don't know if I can do this or not because he wasn't drafted.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
I'm going Harry Shipp.
Yeah.
Harry Shipp.
Yeah, Harrison Shipp, but
whatever. They have a Harry Shipp. They've been calling him Harry Shipp.
Harry Shipp. Say that 5 times fast.
But 6 goals, 5 assists. I know Chicago Fire is not really doing so hot, but I mean, to get that out of a rookie, it's either him or Patrick Mullins.
Yeah, which were my two. Yeah, I agree with you fully on that. And you know, to be honest, we did talk about Harrison Shipp in our pre-draft podcast when we were talking about homegrown, and it's unfair because it diminishes the draft a bit, and he would have been one of the top picks in the draft and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think he's shown, you know, again, it shows you when, you know, a team is struggling, it gives an opportunity for these younger players to come in. It also says, you know, as a caveat, it also says, you know, Montreal, you know, you can give Miller some credit, and Miller has played, and he has looked okay. But what Montreal could have done with the draft, knowing that they were going to struggle this year, giving players opportunities to play and stuff like that, and they haven't taken advantage of that.
Okay. For breakout star, I'm going to go with the guy that you had as your top midfielder, Pedro Morales.
Okay.
7 goals, 8 assists.
Yeah.
I think pretty much everything you said applies here. And I don't think Vancouver would be nearly as good without him. He's getting the best out of Darren Maddox and Hurtado and Tybert. He's the one who's setting the table for all these guys. So I think you got to give it to him. He's a consideration.
Yeah, yeah. Now, well, this is an interesting question because, you know, to me, breakthrough stands for a player that was under radar for a number of years in the MLS and now is becoming this player that you expected. And so I have two picks. One, I expected to become this, and that's Zardes for LA Galaxy, who's now scoring goals. And, you know, one of the biggest pet peeves I have is they automatically create homegrown players when Toronto had first-round pick and should have drafted them first overall. Yeah, I think he's a star. He's always been a star. And I think the fact that he's now showing he's a star or showing the capabilities of being a star, I think it says a lot of positive things about the MLS, and it also says that he might not be in the MLS for so long. The other one, which, you know, this is the sort of discipline myself, because Joel Plata.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of him.
Fuck Joel Plata. I don't know. I like the guy, right? And the interesting thing is when Toronto was in the CCL a couple of years ago, they're playing Santos in Mexico where they got killed. But because of Mexican soccer, Joel Plata got a lot of space on the ball and he looked amazing, right? And I thought he would never be able to have the same impact in the MLS. I wasn't happy that Toronto got rid of him. I thought that was stupid. I just didn't see him as a go-to guy. And you know, because of Seattle because of Real Salt Lake's had issues with other established strikers and stuff like that, he's come in and he's performed. So yeah, I think he deserves credit.
It's weird. I was thinking of him, so I'm glad you kind of mentioned him there. But most influential signing for me, I'm going with a guy that you like and a guy that I believe you mentioned before anybody else really mentioned him. Giancarlo Gonzalez on Columbus Crew. I think they completely remade their backline a little bit.
I'll let you speak, but just interrupt. Mine, and as again, you know, basically what I did is preseason, there's an article on Red Nation Online, is I projected what the standings were going to be at the end of the season. Now, I don't like going back to during the season because things can change and stuff like that. But every team is at least one or two spots where I predicted them to be, except two teams, right? Portland is worse than expected, even though I thought Portland was going to be worse this year, not as bad as they were. And Columbus is an improvement, right? They're four. I had Columbus finishing ninth in the East, and I think they're sixth or fifth in the East right now. I kind of went a little cheeky with this pick, but I have the combination of Parkhurst and Gonzalez, and the combo of that, right? Because they're both new signings. They're both guys who I liked and both guys who I thought would have an impact. And it really says, you know, it's interesting because, and again, you know, for future podcasts, this could be a deep discussion, but you're talking about Vila and you need goal scoring, and that's a great thing. But, you know, arguably, you have two great defenders. And, you know, this was the whole case with Toronto with the Melberg situation. You have two great defenders. That's going to help your even in the case of DC United, even though they're using MLS guys, it shows the impact that can have on a team.
Parkhurst made the All-Star team and Gonzalez didn't.
Yeah.
So, if you were pressed, who would you pick over the other?
I am. It's funny with the Gonzalez because I think now MLS is trying to hide him, because I think MLS is trying to cash out on him, and I think they're trying to create. They might be in those negotiations already, right? So, yeah, it's a good question. I'm 50-50 on both, but yeah, no, I think Gonzalez. Well, Gonzalez's impact in the World Cup, like, you know, when you have the biggest media in the world giving the top 11 for the World Cup and putting him in there, right? Says all it can say, right? You know, of his impact in the World Cup.
And then finally,
I was just going to say, sorry for the breakthrough, just because, again, like Ziggy Smith is the coach, it sort of has to be said, Jermaine Defoe with Toronto. Because, you know, it was a last place team last year. It's a playoff team now. He scored at the pace that actually I projected through the beginning of the season, but he's scoring at that pace. And so, yeah, I think he's a big deal.
And that kind of goes along with my worst signing a little bit, because his supposed strike partner, Gilberto, is my worst signing. I think he was pumped up to be something he's not.
Sure.
And I know he scored in the last game, but what is it? 3 goals he has now or something like that?
Yeah.
Still not enough.
I felt kind of bad because I've been critical of always of him, right? So the fact he's becoming that is arguably if he was in as a normal price player, we'd be less hard on him. So as a complete bust, and there's a couple, but the one who I put is Gonzalez for Montreal. Right, because there was someone who had a story behind him and hasn't done anything, right? And Gilberto, the interesting thing with Gilberto is if an MLS team decides, Yerudi's doing that now with Portland, if an MLS team decides this is our guy and gives him all the chances, you know, his results might be a bit better, even though he's still a disappointing signing and not worth it in the end.
But those are our midseason awards. Let us know if you agree or disagree. You can tweet us directly at Kamel Hilton or at ENB Sports. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. Hop onto the Gaffer and Hooligan Facebook page and find this podcast on the War Room Sports Podcast.
I was going
Network
to add.
That's radio.com.
I was going to add one more question. Oh, and it's a good way to leave us off. Because we're at midseason, basically, in the MLS midseason, right now, who do you think the MLS Cup final is and who is your favorite to win it?
Well, to begin the season, I went New England and Seattle. I'm gonna stick with Seattle. Eastern Conference. DC United.
Okay.
And I think I gotta go Seattle to win it.
Okay. I did a season projection, so I never did a cup final projection. My top teams in the season were LA and Toronto. I'm worried now about Toronto in the one-off game against another opponent. So I'm going to go for LA and Kansas City, and I'm going to take LA as the winner.
Okay. Interesting. But I think we'll end it there. How does it feel to be co-host in your first show?
There you go, man. The responsibility.
Yeah. I think you need to learn not to cut me off when I'm paying the bills.
Sure.
But before we go, be sure to check out the other brands of podcasts within the RNO family. You can check out Eastside Stand Up with Ian Clark, has you covered for all things TFC. Steve Botcher provides the RNO interview series with key figures within the game. The boys at From the Black Hole, Rob, Jeff, and Lars, bring their unique style of coverage to Canadian soccer. I think both of us are going to be their next show Wednesday. There's some like mega pod between all of us.
We're going to all join to a giant robot and take over the pod world.
So be on the lookout for that. And you have Ours is the Fury podcast on everything Ottawa Fury and NASL. And also, just quickly to add in, Plastic Pitch. They're now on Twitter at Plastic Pitch Mag. The new issue is going to drop later this month. I have an article coming out for that, so just be on the lookout for that.
Good.
But until next time, guys, cheers.
Cheers.